A bit of an upset here at Radio Derb this week, listeners. You will recall that my faithful factotum, Pepe, has been having unspecified surgery at an upstate clinic. Well, Pepe's been convalescing for a couple of weeks now, and he seems to be fine. But then, in midweek, I got a call from him. Listen to this. Apparently, what happened was Pepe met a fellow in this clinic having the same operation, whatever it was, who invited him to join the faculty at San Francisco State University, Department of Razar Studies. Pepe accepted, and so now we're in a bind. With Pepe on the premises, we could tick no fewer than 4 of the diversity boxes on the EEOC compliance forms, Pepe being a mixed-race, transgendered, undocumented immigrant, registered disabled on account of strabismus. Now we're coming up short on diversity here at Buckley Towers, and the suits are going round looking worried. That's the problem with these diversity twofers, threefers, and in Pepe's case, forfers. They are in such demand. Well, any listener seeking a job in our lavishly equipped sound studio here on the 95th floor of Buckley Towers in the heart of Manhattan, drop us a line. You'll need to be at least a diversity twofer, though we don't need Eric Holder's boys coming down here and trashing the place. You know what those Department of Justice people are like. Nice little radio show you've got here, Mr. Derbyshire. Be a shame if anything happens to it. OK, on with the motley. Following that distressing call from Pepe, I looked up the college department that he's joining. Yep, here it is. San Francisco State University, Department of Razar Studies. 13 professors and assistant professors on the faculty, teaching Razar this and Razar that. But what is Razar Studies? I went to the website seeking enlightenment. They have an FAQ page that's frequently asked questions. And just reading off that page, question, why the term Razar? Answer, the term Razar literally means race, or colloquially, the people. Oh, I see. So they're teaching the kids about race. Isn't that nice? And Razar Studies is only one component of a much bigger enterprise at San Francisco State U. That is the College of Ethnic Studies, with 6,000 students, 47 professors, and 175 courses spread over 4 departments, which are Asian American Studies, Africana Studies, Razar Studies, and American Indian Studies. Seems to me there's something missing there. Anyway, this is a huge part of the instruction there at San Francisco State. For comparison, the Department of Computer Science has a mere 9 full-time professors and assistant professors. The School of Engineering lists 26 faculty personnel on its website, but it's not clear how many of them are full-time professors. Although I must say it is clear that the demographics of engineering and computer science faculties differ quite strikingly from those of ethnic studies. Now, this is a public university in San Francisco, part funded by the taxpayers of California. That's California as in flat broke. California as in greatest state fiscal crisis the USA has ever known. Here's a prediction from Radio Derb. The Computer Science Department and the School of Engineering at San Francisco State will both be shut down, their labs sold off, their buildings levelled, and the ground ploughed up and sown with salt, before a single professor is let go from the College of Ethnic Studies. After all, what use is that picayune geeky stuff about engineering and computer science? We should just leave all that to China and India to do. America's sacred task at this point in the evolution of human civilization is to push forward the great wheel of knowledge in fields that are really critical to our children's future. You know, like Raza studies. All right, question of the week. Do you know how awkward it is to have a political argument with a naked man? Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. I tell you, discussions can get pretty heated up there in the grotto after hours, and many's the time Jonah and I have squared off behind the waterfall over Woodrow Wilson's Federal Reserve policy. The question was actually asked by Representative Eric Masser, who sounds like one of Harriet Beecher Stowe's characters, but who is in fact the congressman for New York's 29th, up there in the burned-over district by Canada somewhere. Masser was striving to come up with another reason for his recent resignation, to add to the 15 or so that he'd already offered us. The administration, he said, in the unclad person of Rahm Emanuel, had forced him out on account of his lack of enthusiasm for the healthcare bill. This was after he'd told us that he'd resigned because of an ethics investigation into whether or not he'd made a pass at a male staffer, which in turn came after the explanation that he was resigning for health reasons, which in its turn followed a story about a gypsy telling him that he should never run for re-election in a year that was divisible by 67. The only real point of interest here to the universe outside Eric Masser's head is whether he in fact made a pass at a male staffer, and whether anybody should care in an age when insufficient enthusiasm for celebrating gayness can get you fired. As far as I can judge, Masser's guilty of nothing more than some salty language and horseplay at a party. Well, possibly the language went beyond salty. The congressman who served 24 years in the Navy tells us that, quote, "I did in fact use language in the privacy of my own home and in my inner office that might make a chief petty officer feel uncomfortable," end quote. From what I understand about chief petty officers, that could be way beyond salty. Even so, it's a sad measure of the girlification of our society that a few cuss words and a little horseplay can get a congressman in front of the ethics committee. Next thing you know, they'll be taking the spittoons away from the House chamber. If giving noogies to staffers is a firing offence, what is it when a Congress critter fails to report income, engages in sleazy real estate deals, and makes pee-pee all over the rules for using congressional facilities? And whatever it is for the ordinary run of congressmen, what is it when the congressman in question is chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, charged with overseeing the writing of tax rules for the nation? Well, what it is dear old Charlie Rangel poking a finger in the eye of the man. However, with congressional approval ratings so far underwater they're holding caucus meetings in the grand ballroom of the SS Titanic, dear old Charlie had to go. Dear old Charlie. You can't find anyone with a bad word for dear old Charlie. Hardscrabble Jim Crow era childhood, valiant service to his country in the Korean War, schmoozer and accommodator, gentrifier of Harlem, everyone's friend, every political talk show host's favourite guest, dear old Charlie has been coasting along on a warm tide of general public affection for 40 years, while quietly fortifying the tax and spend culture of his city, state and country, boosting liberal causes, playing the racial guilt hustle for all he was worth, and making sure, by means legal and otherwise, that what he was actually worth increased by leaps and bounds year after year. Dear old Charlie. Everyone has his purpose in the grand scheme of things, though. Now that Teddy Kennedy's left us, We still at least have dear old Charlie to remind us of the need for term limits on all politicians, not just the president. Forbes magazine has published its list of America's 25 richest counties. Top of the list, Loudoun County, Virginia. Where's that exactly? Why, it's just northwest of Washington, D.C., a dormitory suburb of our nation's capital, in fact. Pretty much everyone in Loudoun works for the government. Median annual family income, $110,643. Yep, things are pretty good in Loudoun County. Quote from Forbes, jobs in Loudoun have grown 4% between the second quarter of 2007 and the second quarter of 2009, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, end quote. Recession? What recession? The same applies all around D.C. Six other counties in that top 25 are suburbs of the capital. Fairfax, Arlington, Stafford, Prince William, Charles, and Alexandria. Yes, you saps down there in the private sector may be worrying about how to raise the next mortgage payment, but in government land, it's party time. I was a bit surprised to see that my own county of Suffolk, New York, out here on breezy Long Island, squeaked into the list at number 25. I called in Mrs. Derbyshire from the nearby stretch of woodland where she was grubbing for roots and showed her the article. The eagle-eyed Mrs. D noticed that the Suffolk County data that Forbes is using is pre-crash from 2008, so that it doesn't represent current circumstances here. Then she fainted from malnutrition, and I had to revive her with some of the soup that I'd made from boiling up my old gardening boots. Yes, things are tough all over. Except for those of you who were wise enough to get a government job. Also from Suffolk County, we made the August pages of the New York Times last week. The issue here was a grisly murder that took place in Suffolk County back in November 2008. A gang of teenage punks in one of the small towns here beat up and stabbed Marcelo Lucero, an illegal immigrant from Ecuador. Well, the case has just now reached the jury selection stage, and things aren't going well. The Times headline reads, "In jury selection for hate crime, a struggle to find tolerance." In the accompanying story, we read that a lot of the jurors are excusing themselves or being excused because of their strong feelings on illegal immigration. Quote, "Those who raised illegal immigration as a factor in their ability to serve chose their words carefully, so as not to condone the crimes for which Mr. Conroy stands accused. One man, a school bus driver, said his Teamsters Union had taken a stand on what he described as a lack of a federal immigration policy, and because some witnesses might be illegal immigrants, this would be a problem for him. Before he was released, the man said that what he has and what he has earned was gained legally, not illegally. I'm the old-fashioned way," he told Justice Doyle. End quote. As a resident of Suffolk County, I can testify that those kinds of sentiments are pretty general here. People are mad as hell at the federal government's failure to enforce the people's laws on immigration. Suffolk is a county of working and middle-class people. The main stocks are Italian, Irish, German, African-American, English and Scandinavian, with a scattering of Asians and Puerto Ricans, and some heavily interbred Aboriginal remnants. It's very bourgeois at all class levels. People here work hard to support their families. We respect the law, and we're proud of our country. We pay high property taxes to support good schools. People here in Suffolk County can't understand why those schools are filling up with the children of scofflaws who pay no taxes, who shouldn't even be in our country. My own township in Suffolk has recently fenced off some waste ground and announced they're going to turn it into soccer fields. This has got people mad. You can't have a conversation around the township without it coming up. People say, we're paying all these taxes so that illegals can play soccer? Now, it's too bad that Mr. Lucero was murdered, and I and my neighbours are happy to see justice take its course, if the court can find itself a jury at last. We have respect for the law, you see. Unlike the federal government, which stops enforcing our laws as soon as some powerful agribusiness CEO gets on the phone to his congressman. In one of those weird conjunctions that sometimes happen, this week has seen a spate of breast milk stories. First up, we had that lady in Owensboro, Kentucky, who was taken to the cells for public intoxication one night, and then, while she was changing into the orange jumpsuit, she squirted breast milk at the deputy in charge of her. This was a very bad move, or squeeze. Public intoxication is only a misdemeanor in Kentucky, but assaulting a deputy, even just with body fluids, is a felony. The target deputy had to undergo decontamination, as breast milk is considered a biohazard, which, depending on how much the perp had drunk, may indeed have been the case. I had to undergo decontamination myself after reading that story for exposure to excessive grossness. I had barely got out of the decontamination unit, then I found myself looking at breast milk story number two. A restaurant owner in New York City who made cheese from his wife's breast milk. When this story first came out, we were given to understand that the preparation of this unusual delicacy was done in the actual restaurant to be served to customers. The chef soon backpedaled like crazy on that, though, and he now swears that he did it in his own apartment. New York City is the bailiwick of Mayor Michael Bloomberg, for whose anal compulsive fanaticism about other people's behaviour the phrase control freak is pitifully inadequate. The city is also sinking ever deeper into the red, as the mayor's 24/7 obsession with telling us what we may and may not ingest has left the city's public sector unions free to write themselves checks for wages and benefits on the municipal bank account. Put these two features of New York City together, and you have a place patrolled by battalions of inspectors who will hit a restaurateur with a $100,000 fine if his table setting has the fish knife incorrectly positioned relative to the salad fork. So, our breast milk entrepreneur is now telling us that his cheesy endeavours are utterly private and domestic. That didn't stop one of the local radio stations from sending Raymond Sokoloff, the Wall Street Journal's restaurant critic, round to our chef's apartment to sample the dainty. Mr. Sokoloff reported thus. The cheese had, he said, a surprising amount of personality, though he found it a little elastic with a distinct fermented taste. Asked if he thought the product had commercial potential, Mr. Sokoloff squeezed out the following opinion, quote, "You'd have to have a human dairy to produce commercial quantities, and I think the social consequences of putting a lot of lactating women into a sterile environment where a health department would approve what they are doing are really pretty horrifying." Just so, Mr. Sokoloff, just so. Finally, not precisely on the breast milk topic, but in the same approximate zone, here's this story about the baby commercial, taking Lindsay Lohan's name in vain. But, I'm sorry, Lindsay Lohan? This whole segment has just crossed my threshold of disgust. Let's move on. Please. News here from the education front. Education is a treasure trove for the conservative commentator. It is a field dominated by far-left liberal nostrums, none of which is founded on anything real, and most of which are an order of magnitude even sillier than liberal nostrums in other policy areas. I had great fun with education in Chapter 6 of We Are Doomed, but I felt a bit ashamed to be writing it, as it was so easy. Shooting fish in a barrel. There is, in fact, so much lunacy in education. The only problem with writing a 40-page summary of it all was what to leave out. Well, here we go again. First, the Kansas City school system. The gift that keeps on giving for education cynics. We've all heard liberals tell us 1,000 times that the main problem with education is we don't spend enough money on it. In Kansas City, under a judge's orders, the school district got to spend as much as it wanted, over $2 billion across 12 years. Schools were pulled down and rebuilt. There were Olympic-sized swimming pools, professional-quality TV and recording studios, libraries, art galleries and film studios, a mock court and a model United Nations with simultaneous translation equipment, field trips to foreign countries, sports coaching from Olympic medalists, ballet, drama, theatre production, fashion design, before-school programs, after-school programs. To coax white students back to these inner-city schools, the school board laid on taxis to bring them in. What was the result? Test scores declined, dropout rates rose, as of course did waste, embezzlement and corruption in the school district, and the schools got more segregated than ever. Any time a liberal tells you that we need to spend more money on our schools, just utter the two words, Kansas City. Well, as I said, it keeps on giving. Here's the latest news from Associated Press, March 11th. Quote, "The school board of Kansas City, Missouri, narrowly approved the plan on Wednesday night to close 29 of the district's 61 schools to stave off bankruptcy. Administrators have said that the closures are necessary to keep the district from ploughing through what little is left of the $2 billion it received as part of a groundbreaking desegregation case. Although other districts nationwide are considering closures as the recession ravages their budgets, Kansas City's plan is striking." End quote. Oh, and here comes Barack Obama's education secretary, Arne Duncan, a career education bureaucrat who I don't think ever actually set foot inside a classroom. In a speech in Alabama on Sunday, Duncan declared that civil rights in schools have been neglected for 10 years. Later, in a conference call with reporters, he said, quote, "Rather than just determining whether a district complies with the letter of the law in certain areas, the department will look at what the outcomes are for students." Under Obama rules, you see, it isn't enough for a school district merely to obey the law. They have to make student test scores come out the way Arne Duncan thinks they should come out. As with lavish funding for inner-city schools, the consequences here are pathetically easy to predict. I will now predict them. School administrators will avoid federal lawsuits by cooking the books on student test scores. Well, in fact, that's not even a prediction. They're already doing this to comply with the insanely impossible standards set by George W. Bush's No Child Left Behind Act. Ah, education. A treasure trove, a cornucopia of bureaucratic idiocy, government waste, and liberal wishful thinking. Reality? There's no such thing as reality in this zone. Just put enough lawyers on the problem, and the world will be the way you wish it to be. Seasoned Radio Derb listeners will know what comes next. Yes, it's our closing miscellany of brief items. Item. I have to admit, all this parliamentary manoeuvring over the healthcare bill has lost me. What the heck is going on up there? Now I read that the Democrats may get their damn fool bill passed via something called the slaughter solution. What's that? They slaughter anyone who tries to speak against the bill? Or there's a provision in the bill to slaughter people who won't buy health care? Insurance company executives are to be slaughtered en masse? Who knows? For crying out loud, guys, either poop or get off the pot. Enough with the parliamentary minutiae. Item, some kind of peace talks are going on, or scheduled to go on, or being contemplated or something, between Israel and the Arabs. That doesn't strike me as news, I must admit. I mean, when has it ever not been the case that there's some peace plan, peace process, peace talks, peace initiative, peace roadmap, peace telethon, peace beach volleyball tournament, peace this, peace that, going on between the Israelis and the Arabs? Nothing ever comes of any of it because of the fundamental fact that the Israelis want peace and the Arabs don't. Anyway, while this latest peace whatever was happening, or about to happen, Joe Biden went over there to show his supersized dental implants to Benjamin Netanyahu. Netanyahu was suitably impressed, but just as they got down to some real discussions about cosmetic dentistry, Netanyahu's secretary for annoying the hell out of Arabs announced that they were going to build some new houses in Jerusalem, which after all is Israel's capital city, to which the USA is going to move its embassy sometime real soon. The Arabs had conniptions. Biden looked like an idiot. Who would have thought that possible? And Netanyahu and his cabinet colleagues, after closing the door of the cabinet room and pulling down the blinds, fell down on the floor and rolled around laughing uncontrollably. Another day in the Middle East. Item, more news from Nigeria this week. The Nigerians have been celebrating diversity in their traditionally colourful way. In the town of Jos, in the centre of the country, 109 Christians were hacked to death with machetes by a mob of Muslims screaming, "Allahu Akbar!" The attacks, I'm just reading this from the BBC website, the attacks appear to be retaliation for violence in the villages around Jos in January, when most of the victims were said to be Muslim. There were apparently previous sectarian massacres in this town in 2001 and 2008. The BBC cautions us that although these look like sectarian clashes, the underlying causes are economic and political. Of course they are. If not for those underlying economic and political causes, the Christians and Muslims of Nigeria would get along together in perfect harmony, just as they do in places like... And... Item, the Itawamba County School District in Mississippi has a high school senior named Constance McMillan. Ms. McMillan declared that she is a lesbian and wanted to attend the senior prom with her girlfriend and wearing a tux. The school said nay to the gay and nix on the tux. Then the ACLU came in with 800 attorneys and declared, surprise, surprise, that Ms. McMillan's rights were being violated. You know, it's in the Constitution. That article that says that high school kids can wear what they like and date any mammal with an even number of legs. Itawamba County, to their everlasting credit, cancelled the prom. The ACLU is fighting that, too, but they're having trouble finding which article in the Constitution guarantees the right to a high school senior prom. Item, a pretty thin crop of apologies this week. Congressman Massa apologised for one transgression or other, I forget which one. Benjamin Netanyahu, once he had got his laughter under control, apologized to Joe Biden for making Biden look like an empty suit Senate seat warmer whose only qualification for the vice presidency was to add some old white guy ballast to the light-as-a-feather Obama candidacy. And Dan Rather apologized for saying that Barack Obama, quote, couldn't sell watermelons if you gave him the state troopers to flag down the traffic. Apparently this was a gaffe of breathtaking insensitivity, causing African Americans from coast to coast to weep, tear their hair, and leap from tall buildings in rage and humiliation. Eric Holder has launched an investigation. Item: the Iraqi elections went off as planned. As planned, that is, in Tehran. I can't improve on the comments by Daniel Pipes on our group blog, The Corner, so I'll just quote them. Quote, my mood about Iraq could variously be described as depressed, despairing, despondent, dejected, pessimistic, melancholic, and gloomy. Hey, Dan, I've got a book for you. But to continue the quote, that's because the Iraqi regime, along with those of Afghanistan, Lebanon, and the Palestinian Authority, is a kept institution that cannot survive without constant American support. As long as Washington pumps money and sacrifices lives to maintain the Baghdad government, the latter can hobble along. Remove those props, and Iranian-backed Islamists soon take over. End quote. Item: there seems to have been a lot of illegal eating going on this week. That breast milk story aside, here's a hotel in India serving a protected species of sea cucumber. India arrests after sea cucumbers seized at Delhi hotel, says the headline. Not a headline you see very often. Meanwhile, a Los Angeles restaurant called The Hump has been hit with federal charges after serving whale meat. So, if you're looking for somewhere you can get the sea I'm sorry. If you're looking for somewhere where you can get the sea cucumber and whale meat combo with breast milk cheese for dessert, sorry, pal. Not on this planet. There you have it, ladies and gents. A pretty sorry week here in the Republic. But let's look on the bright side. With all those brilliant young minds flowing into the Razar Studies departments of our universities, the USA will soon lead the world once again in something other than long-term debt, leaving the dull-witted, geeky Chinese and Indians in our dust, obsessing over their stupid, pointless math and science and engineering. The future belongs to us, America, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Onward and upward. Excelsior!